You're listening to A Word in Your Ear with Professor Rolly Sussex, a podcast from 612 ABC Brisbane. For more information, visit abc.net.au/Brisbane.
I remember when I was in primary school and the only French phrase I knew was from the song Lady Marmalade, Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir? And I was very impressed with my 10-year-old self for knowing such a saucy little phrase. But on a daily basis, you're probably using more French words and expressions than you realise. Language Professor Rolly Sussex from the University of Queensland having a word in your ear. Good afternoon.
Hello, Kel.
Yes, it was the only one I knew, Rolly, and just because it was in a song.
Well, so long as you didn't use it to other people.
Maybe some of the boys at school. But, you know, in that 10-year-old ridiculous way.
They may not have known in French what it meant anyway.
I had no idea.
No idea. But the English, of course, has borrowed an enormous amount of its vocabulary from French. And all the words in T-I-O-N, like invention, come from French. And the ones in A-G-E, like arbitrage. And most of the ones in I-S-E, like utilize. The recent ones, like hospitalize, are ours. But the older ones, like utilize, are all French. And tens of thousands of words are part of our regular vocabulary, and in fact about 80% of English vocabulary comes from elsewhere, and French is the major source. So actually learning English for French speakers is not so bad from the vocabulary point of view. Mm. They get a really good start. But on top of that, there's a whole lot of expressions from French which are part of, they're not sort of central English, but we use them an awful lot. We don't pronounce them very well. And in fact, French people cringe when they hear them. But, you know, he made another faux pas.
Yes.
And now that in French means a false step. But it's a way of saying a certain sort of imbecilic behavior. Mm. Right? Something which is perhaps not a total catastrophe, but something which is not accepted. It's bad manners, it's bad choice or whatever. And that seems to be the most appropriate way of referring to this thing. Mm. And another one which has taken off recently is degustation. People aren't quite sure how to pronounce it, but degustation means that you go to a restaurant and you try lots and lots of bits and pieces, particularly wines. A degustation of wines is where you'll go and have a little sip of lots and things and maybe go away with several cases of wine yourself.
It's a gorgeous word, degustation.
Oh, yes. Mm. Yes, but degustation, I mean, it's a slightly mysterious word, actually, because you need to know what it means so that you can take benefit from it. Now, some of the French words are actually misleading. Menu is a French word, but it actually means something different. In French, it's the fixed price menu. So you might have, you know, for a fixed price, a main and a dessert and a cup of coffee. That is the menu.
Yes.
Right. Whereas if you eat à la carte, that's what you can choose item by item. And you can actually get quite caught between French and English if you assume that all the English words are going to mean the same, or the English usage is going to mean the same as the French. I've got a whole list of them here.
Great.
I'm going to Hong Kong in about 15 hours. Mm-hmm. And so people will say to me, bon voyage. Now, what would you say to someone in English?
I'd say, have a nice trip.
Have a nice trip. Yeah. Good trip. That's a perfectly good phrase. Safe travels.
Yes.
I think it's a fairly recent one, but it's nice. It's sincere. Mm. But it's English. And somehow bon voyage suggests you're going off on a cruise. Mm. There is something a bit special about that. And often the French words are a bit more classy than the English words. If you have a flat, that's possibly, it might have an ensuite. But if you have an apartment, it might have a jacuzzi. Mm. And there is a sense in which the French ones occupy the upper position and the English ones a bit further down. Another one which you've got to get right is adieu and au revoir. Au revoir is literally see you again. And it's like auf Wiedersehen in German, which is the until the again seeing, and arrivederci in Italian. Whereas in French, if you say adieu, that means we're done, Buster. I don't want to see you again. This is it. Go away.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Ah. I didn't know it was that sort of final a phrase.
It is an absolute portcullis. This is the end of the relationship. Go away.
Mm. I bid you adieu.
Means hop it. Get out of here. And you might have a sense of déjà vu. which is already seen. I've experienced that before.
Yes.
Someone might be an enfant terrible, meaning they're a bit of a pain in the neck. They are inclined to do selfish and out of order things. But do we have a word for that? I don't think so.
No, not really. And it's also, isn't enfant terrible, or there's an element of they're a genius as well in there, that they're very good at something as well?
There's definitely an idea of inspiration, but you know, they are unpredictable and uncontrollable as well.
Yes. Mozart, for example.
Yes.
He was one of those, I think.
Yeah. Now, some of them, like RSVP, I think, we pronounce it the English way. Very few people would know répondez s'il vous plaît, which means reply if you please. It just means please reply to this.
I don't think many people would know now if you asked them
what it means.
Actually, does RSVP stand for?
No, they know what they've got to do. You know, if it's an RSVP there, you're expected to say, yes, I'm coming, or no, I'm not, sorry. You might have a rendezvous with someone.
Yeah.
Or a tete-a-tete, if you're even a bit more intimate. And that might be the pièce de résistance, which is, you know, some really major feature of an exhibition or a dinner or of someone's performance. And if you're lucky, you might get some hors d'oeuvre. Now, that really means apart from the work. In other words, these are things which are not part of the main meal. They're sort of little additions. And yet a good chef will spend a lot of time producing good hors d'oeuvre. I've got heaps more.
Oh, yeah. Hors d'oeuvres. Or horses d'oeuvres.
Horses d'oeuvres, yeah.
Called in certain circles.
In certain circles. But if you go to a black tie dinner, if you said horses d'oeuvres, you would be politely shown the door. Please don't come here. Yes.
Exactly. Food does tend to be, we tend to keep a lot of phrases from the French food, don't we?
Well, cordon bleu is the standard by which good cooking is known.
Yes.
And that just means a blue sash, really. Things like crème brûlée, burnt
baguette.
Cream or crème de la crème, crème fraîche.
Oh, yes.
Now, crème fraîche is weird because it isn't actually fresh cream at all, but it's slightly fermented cream with especially slightly off flavour, which you use for things like making very, very good mash. I think Spencer is good at mash, isn't he?
Yes. No. Yes.
I live in a cul-de-sac.
He never shares, so actually I don't have a clue.
He never shares, no. I live in a cul-de-sac, which means the bottom of the bag.
Yes.
And it's a road which doesn't go anywhere.
Hmm. Do we call them cul-de-sacs or just courts now? We used to call them cul-de-sacs, didn't we?
I think we still do. Although there aren't too many roads which actually have cul-de-sac as their name.
Hmm.
You know, you'd have Canberra Court.
Yes.
And Canberra Court might be closed off and it might actually be like, well, in Canberra, they have circuits as well, which are roads which go around in a circle. But a cul-de-sac is this is a cul-de-sac, you're going to have to turn around and come out. This is a court, you're going to have to turn around and come out. I think that's slightly more confusing.
Yes.
Cul-de-sac, you know, it's got no exit, you're going to have to come out the way you went in.
Mm. Au gratin?
Au gratin, oh yes, more cooking.
Yes.
Lots and lots of cooking things, which show us, I mean, there's a lovely bit in Walter Scott's novels where he says that, I think it's in Ivanhoe, that the names of the animals are Germanic, like pig and horse and cow and bull. But the names of the meats, like beef and pork, actually come from French, which suggests that the English cooking was terrible even then. And it got worse. Not fair.
Oh, now, Rolly Sussex, I've got a couple of questions for you already this afternoon on ABC Local Radio Queensland. If you have a question for Rolly, who's having a word in your ear this afternoon, 1300 222 612. Steve at Spring Hill, hi.
Yeah, hi. Rolly, I think I know what an oxymoron is, and I know what ironic is. I was listening to a song on the radio yesterday by Mental as Anything.
Yeah.
The words went, if you leave me, can I come with you? Which obviously is clever, but doesn't actually make sense. It can't happen.
Mm. Have you seen the film clip for that particular song, Steve?
No, I haven't.
The wife or girlfriend's left him,
yes,
and he starts walking after her, and basically the whole neighbourhood ends up following this poor woman down the street. If you leave me, can I come too? Yeah. So if she leaves, he wants to come along as well. Yeah.
Which obviously she can't leave him.
No.
He can't leave, no.
Is that ironic or is that oxymoron?
No, it's an oxymoron. An oxymoron is a figure of speech. It comes from Greek and it means specially foolish.
Uh-huh.
And it means something which contains its own contradiction.
Uh-huh.
All right. And so this is exactly what you got in this film clip. Okay. And leaving and coming with are not consistent with each other.
Yes. Okay. Oh, good.
But good pickup, Steve.
Okay, yeah. Thanks. Right. Thank you.
And we've also got Jidai at Birkdale. Hi.
Good afternoon, Kelly. Good afternoon, Professor.
And your question, Jidai.
How are you doing today?
Yeah, your question.
Yeah, that one has been attended to, which is the RSVP, the Refundable Evil Play. And the other one I keep wondering is the a la carte, that's one, and then invite or invitation is what I've always known, but people use that invite now.
Okay. Invite is a verb, but the stress was different. It was invite. I'm going to invite you to a party.
Yes.
And the noun from that used to be invitation.
Yes,
but because we can now use nouns as verbs and verbs as nouns quite freely in English, invite has become, I think, probably far more common. Now, if I got an invite to a black tie dinner, I think I'd be a little bit suspicious. You would expect an invitation printed on rather nice paper with a good font and so on. But an invite, I've got an invite to so-and-so's barbecue on Saturday. It's less formal.
Yeah.
And once again, the French word invitation or invitation is definitely more classy, more upmarket, and the more recent English creation is definitely less formal. A la carte is French and it means by the card or by the card, and a la carte is when you choose individual items from the menu and, you know, I'm going to have, shall we say, this main and this dessert, say, rather than in French, if you go to and ask for the menu, it's a fixed price for, shall we say, a main and a dessert altogether.
Tony on Twitter asks Rolly, how true is the tennis score love being derived from the French word for egg?
Yeah, l'œuf. Œuf, O-E-U-F, is the French word for egg. And tennis is one of the games which was not invented in England. An awful lot of our games, like soccer, were invented there, and rugby. Mm. But tennis is a French and there is, in fact, a royal tennis court. There's one in Hobart, and I think there's one in Melbourne. A rather special version of tennis. And l'œuf is the egg in French, and the story is, it's not 100% sure, but we believe that that is, because it's a zero, that is where love comes from.
All right, the shape of the egg. And
the shape of the egg, yes. Not perfectly circular, but close.
Jenny's in Brisbane. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Rolly.
Hello.
When I was a child, I only ever heard the word use. Now a lot of people say utilise. Is utilise just being pretentious, or is it a valid word and it doesn't have any difference to use?
Yeah, they used to be different. Use was simply to make use of something. You know, I'm going to use a knife to cut the apple. Utilize was definitely more formal and more abstract. You know, you're going to utilize certain sorts of certain ideas in constructing a theory. They're becoming closer and closer together nowadays. And a lot of people say utilize, which actually makes you sound a little bit more formal and even pretentious.
Mm.
If you're going to utilize a knife to cut the apple, that sounds strange. Mm. So I think for concrete tasks, use is still right. Utilize is more abstract, but it's starting to encroach on general usage, I'm afraid. You're quite right.
Mm. Jenny, good pickup. Brian and Annalie, hello.
G'day, Kel.
Hey.
Just wanted to ask Riley, talking about irony and oxymorons, where does paradox fit in with that?
Okay. A paradox is something which deliberately juxtaposes two ideas. So it seems to lead to a conclusion that's heading in the wrong direction. A paradox is something which I think leads you to the wrong kind of outcome, right? For example, you might say that the cathedrals have a paradox. They've got lots and lots of wealth, but they've got huge expenses as well to maintain. And so the paradox is there's lots of money, but they've got lots and lots of outgoings as well, and they're caught in a bind between the two.
Can a person be a paradox, you know, hold, say, two conflicting views and therefore they're a paradox, or is that...
You can say that their behavior is paradoxical if they say one thing and do something else. Okay. But paradox normally requires two things which are inconsistent with each other.
All right, we've got Craig at Nambour up next. Thanks for that, Brian. And hello, Craig.
G'day, Kelly and Rolly. How are you?
Excellent.
Well.
Your question.
It's a pronunciation question. I'm not even sure it's a French word. I'm guessing it's probably Latin at least. Fascia. F-A-S-C-I-A.
Mm.
Now, the board around my house, I would call a fascia board.
Yes.
But when you hear people describe the connective tissue under the skin and above the muscle, I've often heard people refer to it as fascia. Yet it seems to be the same
word. As in plantar fasciitis, the foot condition?
Yes.
Is that what you mean, Craig?
Sorry?
As in plantar fasciitis, which is the foot condition.
That would be one, I guess that would be one use of it.
Yeah.
But I think that layer of sort of white tissue below the skin that holds everything together.
Mm-hmm. There is, and these are not very common words. I mean, fascia, the fascia board, is pronounced like that.
Yep.
And that's the piece which covers the end of the rafters, okay?
Yes.
On the other hand, fascia is the regular pronunciation for F-A-S-C-I-A-E, and this is the fibrous tissue which encloses a muscle, okay?
Okay.
So there's fascia, there is actually a difference of pronunciation if you really know what you're talking about.
Right.
Hmm.
So fascia and fascia.
Yeah, okay. And fascia would be even more like the Latin, which is fasciae, F-A-S-C-I-A-E. But if you pronounce it like that, I think someone would assume that you were a very learned doctor going back to the Latin sources of your medicine.
Craig, thank you. And Rolly Sussex, you had a bit of homework as well, an email about startups.
Yeah, this is a good one from a listener, Matthew. And he says, look, with the word startup, we've got a startup company or so many startups in the on the books this year. Is that one word or is it hyphenated?
Mm.
And the answer is that there are actually three ways of doing things like this. The first one is two words, unlinked, with a space in between. The second one has a hyphen, which means they very often hang around together. And the third one is when they actually get squeezed together and form a new word. And I had a bit of a check here, and Google has startup as one word at 210 million, and startup with a hyphen is 118. So it's about 2-1. And this word has very quickly gone from the two-words version all the way through to the one-word version.
Yep.
And I think it will now be in the next version of the dictionaries as a one-word. And you can use either. Both are very common and both are accepted. But I think the identity of this thing as a particular entity is shown by the fact that it's now just one word.
Yep.
The other one we had to do with apostrophes. Last week we were talking about things like decades, you know, the 1960s.
Mm.
And it used to be the case that we'd put an apostrophe between something like that and an S because the S was a plural and the 1960 were numerals.
Yes.
And so there are lots of UFOs being observed at night, UFO apostrophe S. The poor old apostrophe, I'm afraid, is gradually being eradicated from most of the language. And this is another case where it's gone. And George sent me an email and he said, look, it looks strange to see the apostrophe in there. I've usually seen it without. He's quite right. This is the way we usually do it. And Pam Peters, who did the Australian English Style Guide, says that's exactly right.
Oh, okay. Sorted.
There you go.
Sorted, really.
Yep. Sorted, yes.
Well, you enjoy your trip to Hong Kong.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm actually going through Hong Kong to Shantou, which is a small city of about 5 million to the northeast of Guangzhou. And there is an international conference on technology and language teaching in English.
Mm.
And that's going to be a lot of fun.
That sounds great. Well, I hope you'll tell us a bit more about it.
I shall, and I'll bring lots more of Chinese English. Do you want a last word?
I would love one. Thank you.
Okay. Sam Goldwyn. Famous film person. A verbal contract isn't worth the paper it's written on.
Very good. Rolly Sussex, thank you very much.
Thanks, Kel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to A Word in Your Ear, a podcast from 612 ABC Brisbane. For more information, visit abc.net.au/Brisbane.